Welcome to Global Talk, an international affairs podcast from The National. I'm Justin Vella. On the line is Dina Esfandieri, a researcher at the London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies who is focused on Iran. A few days ago, the P5+1 in Iran agreed to extend their talks over Iran's nuclear program until November 24th. What are the main issues still preventing them from reaching an agreement?
So I think that it's quite important, firstly, to highlight some of the progress that's been made during these talks. And there are three main areas. Firstly, it would seem that negotiators have pretty much agreed on a path for downgrading the Iraq heavy water reactor, which was a proliferation concern. They've spoken about different ways to convert the Fordow enrichment plant into, for example, a possible research facility. And they seem to have agreed more or less on intrusive transparency and verification measures, which are intended to prove the peacefulness of Iran's program. So all of this is really good, but as you know, serious gaps remain. And they're clearly significant enough that they weren't able to bridge them before the 20th of July deadline. So the main gaps are on the duration of the agreement. Iran, for example, is talking about an agreement that would last between 5 and 8 years, while the P5+1 is talking more in line of, 20 plus years. Another area of another problematic area is on sanctions relief, and mainly on the order, the timeline, and the scale of sanctions relief. But the most important gap that remains is on the size and efficiency of Iran's enrichment program. The main issue here is this idea of Iran's practical needs. The P5+1 says that Iran does not need a significant enrichment program, and that it has agreements with countries like Russia to fuel its power plants, while Iran says that it can't rely on external providers and should be able to fuel its own plants. So the P5+1 is calling for a sharp reduction in Iran's enrichment capacity, while Iran wants to, perhaps is open to reducing it for the moment, but it would prefer to maintain its current capability and have a plan for future expansion.
It was just announced that Iran has diluted all its 20% enriched uranium or converted it to oxide. Will this be welcomed by the West as a positive step after the extension of talks?
Absolutely. So it's important to highlight that the 20% enriched uranium is the most sensitive stockpile of enriched uranium that Iran has, because it provides for a faster path to the bomb. Under the November 13th agreement, which is the interim agreement signed last year, Iran agreed to dilute or turn most of it into oxide fuel. And as you said, this is the IAEA just said that most of this had been done. So it clearly shows that Iran has been implementing the interim agreement and that it's been doing it in good faith. And in return, the P5+1 have been implementing their end of the bargain by giving Iran slow but steady agreed sanctions relief.
If a deal is eventually reached and sanctions lifted, what will be the impact of Iran re-entering the regional and international markets in terms of oil prices and production? And then also, do you think that there will be a rush by international businesses to position themselves in Iran?
I think it's quite important, firstly, to highlight that any deal, sanctions relief will be very, very slow. It'll take many years for it to be implemented. So while even with the interim agreement, there's been an increase in interest in Iran and the Iranian market, there's not really a risk that anybody is going to be rushing back into Iran until the terms and timeline, the terms of the agreement and the timeline of sanctions relief is very clear. A lot of companies, financial companies, etc., have invested quite a lot in complying with sanctions. And then a lot of these companies are also very risk averse. So they don't want to rush back into Iran and risk being caught out. But there is one thing that's absolutely true, and that's Iran is a major untapped market. And so once we do have a nuclear agreement and the terms of it are quite clear, I think there will be slow but steady increase in interest in Iran.
Along with its professed aim to foster greater cooperation with the West and its Arab neighbors, Iran also wants to be acknowledged as a regional power and also promote Islamic democracy. We see a clear example of Tehran proving its regional power in Iraq and in Syria. But where else do you see it exerting its influence, and where is it trying to promote Islamic democracy?
I agree with you. I think that Iran is definitely a force to be reckoned with in the region, and I think that's undeniable at this stage. But from an international perspective, the goal is to integrate it into regional relations and thereby have more leverage over it rather than treating it as a pariah and making it want to exert its influence in the region. But up until now, all engagement with Iran has really been dependent on a nuclear deal. So if there is a deal, then this would make it easier to talk to Iran, to engage it on a whole range of issues, and hopefully rein it in a little bit, including on things like Iraq and negotiations on Syria, as you mentioned, where, in my view, there'll be no solution without the involvement of Iran, because it's just too involved in Syria. In terms of exerting its influence throughout the region, it certainly does, but it doesn't do it in a very coordinated manner or, for example, as it's often pinpointed, to do it just with the Shias, for example. Iran is not, it's not a sectarian state, because if it were, then it would have massive problems within its own borders, given the diversity of sects that are within Iran.
Do you see Iran pursuing a more sectarian policy outside its borders?
Necessarily. Though Iran is a reactionary state. So what happens is, if it finds itself in a situation, for example, in Iraq or even in Bahrain, where other countries are supporting opposing sects, then it will see that as an opportunity to support some of its own minorities in the region. So then it will say, okay, well, the Shias are oppressed minorities, and therefore we have to help them. But it has never been the first country to promote the defense of Shias in the region. As you say, Iran wants to spread Islamic democracy throughout the region. So it would rather have influence over all Muslims rather than just Shias.
And has Iran and Hamas, the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip that is currently battling Israel, been able to rebuild ties after a split over the Syrian war?
So there was definitely a split after that. But Iran is quite a pragmatic actor, and it's going to want to safeguard its interests in the region. So just because they disagreed, it's not going to stop dealing. Well, certainly it hasn't, and it's not going to stop dealing with Hamas over disagreements over Syria. It's going to ensure that channels of communication are kept open, and it's going to try to continue to influence Hamas and what it does. And on the other side, Hamas can't act on its own. It also needs Iran, especially given the latest rounds of the conflict with Israel. It cannot sustain war efforts against Israel on its own.